Post and the Wall Street Journal. Legal memoranda making official policy the infliction of mistreatment and torture of detainees and prisoners. What is it that constitutes a person who qualifies for this treatment? Here is the New York Times on January 23rd.
Ralph, we'll be getting into that in just one moment. It's the 5 o'clock hour. This is the time when Taking AIM comes to you each week, each Tuesday from 5 to 6. And we'd like to say right now that this is Taking AIM with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. For those of you just tuning in, we've been on for the last 2 hours. We regret we weren't able to inform you unless you're on our, receive our email bulletins. You would write to Taking AIM at PACBELL, that's PACBELL.net, and we really would like to have you, and you'd receive bulletins and notifications, or on the WBAI website. There is a newsletter, and you can also receive by email the WBAI newsletter. Go to www.wbai.org to find out how you can too can get weekly notifications. Today we're bringing you Buried Alive, Torture in America. Some of you might remember listening to this three-hour presentation 1 year ago. We're bringing it again to you, and it's been edited very fast-paced, even faster-paced than Taking AIM is normally. Fast-paced presentation, tight editing of Buried Alive, Torture in America, because torture is so much in the news. It is becoming official policy. What we show in Buried Alive, Torture in America is it has been the official policy for more than 2 million prisoners incarcerated today, the more than 6 million who have passed through U.S. prisons, federal and state prisons, and this does not include the county jails. 6 million people in the United States. Buried Alive, Torture in America, for your contribution of $125. It's a 3-CD, 3-hour set, high fidelity, 212-209-2950. Over this hour, we're going to play excerpts from each of the 3 CDs, and we're also going to discuss some of the content on the CDs, and as well, what has been taking place in Iraq, in Guantanamo, in Afghanistan, but most importantly, in the official halls of power. 212-209-2950. Our engineer today, Tony Ryan, we appreciate his being with you. At one point, we'll be thanking each and every one of you, or some of you. Hopefully, we can't get to everybody. Keep those phones ringing. You can call while the CD is playing, 212-209-2950. We are in our fourth year now of Taking AIM. Each and every week, thanks to you and all the support, all the donations you have given to sustain WBAI, please, let's keep it going.
Yes, brothers and sisters, the New York Times, January 9th. We are all torturers now. A guide to the memo on torture on January 9th. In the Newsweek issue of that week, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the current New England Journal of Medicine revealing that doctors across 25 prisons in Iraq and in secret detention centers of the CIA and of the U.S. military in countries around the world, devising methods of physical and psychological torture, all of these routinized over the past decades in the American prison system, the subject of Buried Alive. The New England Journal of Medicine discloses that doctors routinely now falsify medical reports to conceal the deaths of those who perish under torture. And the British publication Lancet documented last week that, quote, physical torture with medical assistance in devising the techniques, unquote, has become routine, and that special forces are kidnapping people in many countries who oppose U.S. policy, who are then placed under secret detention and subjected to this treatment. That is the gravamen of the article by Mark Danner in the New York Times on January 6th, entitled, We Are All Torturers Now. It's instructive, I think, for us to take note of the fact that at the time of the inaugural of George W. Bush, when demonstrators were attempting to exercise their right of free speech in Washington, D.C., and on Pennsylvania Avenue, the New York Times published an article on January 23rd by Eric Schmidt, "Commandos See Duty on U.S. Soil in Role Redefined by Terror Fight." The article states, "Somewhere in the shadows of the White House and the Capitol, a group of super-secret commandos stand ready with state-of-the-art weaponry to swing into action to protect the presidency. As part of an extraordinary army of 13,000 troops, police officers, and federal agents marshaled to secure the inauguration, these elite forces have been poised to act in the United States under a 1997 program, updated and enhanced after the September 11 attacks, but departing from how the military has historically been used on American soil. The commandos are operating under a secret counterterrorism program codenamed Power Geyser, and mentioned publicly in a new book, Codenames, Deciphering U.S. Military Plans, Programs, and Operations in the 9/11 World, written by William M. Arkin, a former intelligence analyst for the Army. The Special Operations Forces in Washington, it's an operation that is highly classified, but the article in the New York Times discloses that the special mission units belong to a joint Special Operations Command, a secretive command based at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, whose elements include the Army Unit Delta Force.
Ralph, we've been discussing that secret joint operations over the past couple of years on Taking AIM. As you know, on Taking AIM, we really try to bring the information that is provided piecemeal in the press. We bring it to you analyzed. We find the links and what it means for each and every one of us. And that's what we do with Buried Alive Torture in America. It is a timely program. So 212-209-2950. And now to some of the excerpts from this 3-CD, 3-hour program.
This is Taking AIM with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, January 6th, 2004. Prison guards on trial for staging gladiator fights between inmates before killing them. Electroshock stun belts that leave a man groveling or unconscious. Pregnant women shackled to beds. Caustic pepper spray methodically daubed or sprayed on the face and eyes of nonviolent protesters. Scores of supermax high-security prisons with conditions so inhumane the legendary Alcatraz jail near San Francisco seems mild. These are not a fictional Hollywood mix of ancient Rome and third millennium Singapore. This treatment was at the core of the first United Nations report on torture in the United States, from New England and New York to Los Angeles and Seattle, a report that was issued in May 2000. It was called by the Sunday Herald in Scotland, "Jailhouse Horror in the Land of the Free." Of the world's 8 million inmates, 2 million are in the United States' overflowing jails, reported the Sunday Herald. Of those, 60% are minorities, while only one quarter of the U.S. population is African American or Latino. In fact, according to the United States government official statistics, one out of every three African American males, one out of six Hispanic males, and one out of 17 Caucasian males can expect to go to prison in their lifetime. What we are talking about are stun guns and stun belts with product names such as Intimidator, White Lightning, Freedom, and Consumer Spirit, manufactured in the United States. Amnesty International reports that the prison inmate population has increased almost sevenfold from 1980, 24 years ago, from 300,000 to over 2 million. Chain gangs have been introduced. Work crews are shackled together electronically or fashioned with metal chains to subdue them. No Western country other than the United States uses chain gangs or stun belts. And most egregiously are the super max prisons. Over 200,000 inmates in 60 super max prisons across the United States or in control units within the prisons themselves, the other regular prisons.
Maya, this program, Buried Alive, is dedicated to Bonnie Kerness, the director of the American Friends Service Committee. Bonnie, who has been for nearly for something like 30 years, Bonnie Kerness has been the key figure in amplifying our knowledge, in coordinating the campaigns, and in maintaining a consistent and constant contact with the victims of this torment and this torture across the United States. Bonnie, who most recently communicated with us in the new year and sent us her stunning reports on the horrors that we're going to recount today, is in the struggle as she has been for 30 years, speaking, organizing, mobilizing, informing, and documenting. This is dedicated to you, Bonnie, as it is to Tafawa Balogun. Tafawa, who is in his 20th year in prison in a 30-year sentence, who is our friend and comrade and who we've been attempting to sustain for nearly 12 years now. Of his 20 years in prison, Tafawa has spent over 10 years in total isolation. We're talking about 23 and a half hours a day lockdown, continuous abuse, torment by guards, isolation, numbing, deadening, tormenting isolation.
We should mention that Tafawa has been in prison since a youth at the age of 15 years old in many prisons throughout the state of New Jersey and currently incarcerated in East Jersey State Prison in Rahway.
And since we're taking a moment about Tafawa, let me just make this particular point. A 15-year-old boy with his 15-year-old cousin in a fight with a 13-year-old over a loaf of Wonder Bread. When the cousin picked up a stone in the course of a fight and hit the boy over the head, the boy dying, Tafawa contacting the police, informing them of the event, not involved in the actual murder, plea bargained by a public defender for 30 years and for murder one. Tried not as a child but as an adult. Any white middle class kid would have been out of there with parole, not just parole but without sentence. Immediately upon incarcerated at the age of 15, subjected to isolation, which lasted over a decade.
Buried Alive, Torture in America. Let us look at first at this seminal United Nations study. Not the first study about torture, but one that targeted the United States, pinpointed the United States for the first time in UN history. It said, quote, since the United States ratified the Convention Against Torture in October 1994, its increasingly punitive approach towards offenders has continued to lead to practices which facilitate torture or other forms of ill treatment prohibited under international law. From the use of long-term isolation in super maximum security units, through the routine employment of chemical sprays to subdue suspects and prisoners, and the incarceration of asylum seekers in cruel and degrading conditions, to the use of electroshock weapons in local jails and courts, the USA is standardizing practices which undermine the aim of the convention to eradicate state torture and ill treatment from the planet, reported Amnesty International about the UN Committee Against Torture's report. Let's look at some of the examples in the UN report. Ronnie Hawkins, subjected to an 8-second 50,000-volt electroshock from a remote-controlled stun belt in open court on the order of a judge.
To punish his verbal statements. The judges routinely authorize the use of electric shock through stun belts on prisoners when the prisoner tries to ask a question to assert their rights or to challenge a ruling.
Inmates at two supermax prisons in Virginia subjected to arbitrary electroshocks from stun belts. Perry Connor, beaten in the genital area repeatedly, electroshocked until he lost control of his bowels and not allowed to shower for 6 days. Widespread punitive solitary confinement and excessive use of shackling, handcuffing, and four-point restraint against children in a South Dakota juvenile facility. James Earl Livingston, a mentally ill man, died after being pepper sprayed and left in a restraint chair, one of several deaths associated with this device. Liquid pepper spray dabbed directly into the eyes of nonviolent anti-logging protesters, a technique allegedly is the word from the United Nations, against the WTO protesters in 1999. This is just the tip of the story, tip of the iceberg of what you're going to hear today. The torture, the grueling stories of the brutalization of individuals here in the United States, and primarily political prisoners, mentally ill prisoners, people without access, out of sight, but not out of mind.
Well, I have to emphasize here that unlike the reports of Bonnie Kerness, notwithstanding the importance of Amnesty International's documentation, the isolated instances that are cited by Amnesty International, though important, do not illuminate the fact that this is not a random instance in a given institution, but the standard treatment of prisoners in what are called ADSEG, or administrative segregation, talk about a euphemism, in the management control units, in the special housing units, and of course in the supermax prisons, where this form of sustained torment is routinized and constant for the very mass of the prison population so treated. It is the most barbaric, almost medieval, set of standardized treatments that are accorded people in isolation, not for days, not for weeks, not for months, but for years and for decades, where 23 and a half hours a day people are without contact with other human beings and allowed into a cage attached to the cage, where they are able to do some jumping jacks at best, constantly under monitoring, shackled, subjected to belts where from remote control, 50,000 volts, the standard charge, can be released at the whim of a sadistic guard, a constant, because these guards, as in Bayside Prison, where Tafawa has recorded the fact that the Cowtown guards actually run up a racist flag, where a majority of guards in prison after prison are in racist organizations, select their jobs and torment their victims on the basis of their race and on the basis of their being targeted as victims and specific populations designed for suppression and for disappearance in American prisons.
The prison inside the prison, control units, supermax prisons, and devices of torture, is a briefing paper by Rachel Kamel and Bonnie Kerness that was released by the American Friends Service Committee last year, 2003. And in it, they speak of the Marianization of imprisonment, referring to the Marion Federal Penitentiary in Illinois, which began the first control unit in 1972. Before that, and later, Prison Watch, the program of the criminal justice program of the AFSC that Bonnie Kerness had been one of the directors of, they had received letters in the 1980s about management control units in New Jersey. And then they began their lengthy investigation. Similar units to the Marion facility were established in 1972, also in New Jersey and in Massachusetts. By 1997, 45 states in the District of Columbia, as well as the federal system, were operating these specialized control units. But during the 1990s, a new generation of super maximum, or supermax prisons as they're called, spread throughout the United States. And these institutions are designed for permanent isolation of their inhabitants. According to Human Rights Watch, there are more than 20,000 prisoners, 2% of what they had studied, the U.S. prison population, held in a long-term solitary confinement, and 56,000 in control units, with over 200,000 reported by the Sunday Herald in isolation itself, temporarily or permanently. The prisoners are confined in tiny cells the size of a parking space. Now, conceptualize this, a parking space, as Ralph said, for 23 to 24 hours a day. It's an eerie silence, and in some cases, there's constant unpleasant noise, lights on for 24 hours a day, and other forms of sensory assault. The cages, the size of the small bathroom, the parking space, with tiers of cages above and below and to either side. Many of the cells have no windows. They're soundproof, and there is little interaction with anyone other than the staff, and in many of these supermax prisons, there is no interaction with the staff either. Everything is done remotely. Therapeutic and educational programming is non-existent. And again, as Ralph said, exercise is solitary. Envision the old-style zoo where you had animals in a cage and then the cage opened up to a little outside pen. Visits, telephone calls, and mail from family and friends are severely restricted. In many cases, it's considered a privilege so that you can get a call or a letter once a month. And reading material is heavily censored. In some of the supermax prisons, it is limited solely to your legal papers and religious material. When a prisoner leaves a cell, a strip search is conducted, even though the prisoner has not been in contact with anyone.
The nominal entitlement to legal papers and to so-called religious materials is largely absent by its denial and abuse. Tafawa, who we have represented in so many years, whenever he would get legal papers pertaining to the court, the guards would break into his cell, they would shred the papers, they would disappear the papers, they would pour water over the papers, a routinized denial of the right to essential elements for conducting a legal process by a prisoner. In fact, anything that the prisoner has, anything that the prisoner does, is monitored by sadistic guards who seize upon the opportunity to break in and to destroy on a random basis.
You've been listening to the first track of the first CD of the 3-CD set Buried Alive, Torture in America. Please get to the phone now, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Your generous contribution of $125 to WBAI, your station that brings you Taking Aim each and every week. Buried Alive, Torture in America, 212-209-2950. As we close out the first track of there are four tracks on each of the 3 CDs, Ralph was speaking about Tafawa Balogun, and we have before us one of Tafawa's poems. I thought it would be nice for Ralph to read.
Well, you know, Mari, it puts me in mind of the fact that when Tafawa was a boy, was imprisoned and his mother was dying, they wouldn't allow him to even go to the funeral. And when he complained, they took him out of his solitary confinement and they threw him in the hole. The hole is a place where there's no light, where you're naked and where you're without any kind of contact and are in there for weeks. This is the poem of Tafawa called Buried Alive. Dying from a slow death interjected in the human vein. If one ain't strong, it can drive one mentally insane. The pain is so intense and so profound. In a remote place like prison, love is unsound. And human logic is tied in a nutshell that oftentimes is rewarded in another man's living hell. Seeing hidden tears in another man's eyes, hearing how grandma people pray to their gods while hoping that a new beginning would fall from heaven's skies, would and never will relieve you and me from the feeling of being buried alive.
Buried Alive, Torture in America. 212-209-2950. In the program, Buried Alive, Torture in America, we discuss particularly the supermax prisons and isolation and how prisoners survive this 24-hour-a-day, endless years of isolation, how they tap into their cells and make connections with people outside. Also, we discuss the torture instruments that are used by police across the United States for people who are detained and people who are imprisoned. That's right, detainees as well. And we discuss the treatment of children and women and slave labor as an institution in the United States today. One aspect of torture instruments is the devil's chair. In this first section, we refer to the four-point restraint. An article by Anne Marie Cusack about the devil's chair, she writes, is intended as a restraint. It has led to torture and death. And this is an article that you can find on www.angelfire.com. Jail and prison employees call it the strap-a-lounger, the bark-a-lounger, the weak care chair, and the B-suite chair. Inmates and their lawyers have other names for the device: torture chair, slave chair, and devil's chair. They are referring not to the electric chair, but to a restraining device where belts and cuffs prevent the prisoner's legs and arms and torso from moving. Here are some examples of this restraint chair, the four-point restraint chair. It's widespread use across the country. Jails, state, federal prisons, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the U.S. Marshal Service, state mental hospitals, juvenile detention centers, and now foreign governments are importing it from the United States. Amnesty International had called for a federal investigation. Well, given who the Attorney General is about to be, we can say, first and foremost, there will be no federal investigation. On December 20th, 1994, Shedrick Brown died after struggling with guards while he was being forced into the restraint chair in Hillsborough County Jail in Tampa, Florida. He was found unresponsive after 4 hours, having suffered a stroke, and he died an hour later. Even the Hillsborough County Medical Examiner's Office had to rule that his death had been a homicide. On April 17, 1975, Carmelo Morella died in the Sacramento, California County Jail while strapped into a restraint chair. Officially, his death was listed as the result of probable acute cardiac arrhythmia due to combined restraint asphyxia. That means he couldn't breathe. Severe physical exertion, and they said a manic psychotic episode. In other words, he could not breathe. He tried to move, and then they said it was a manic psychotic episode. There was a class action lawsuit by people who had been restrained in this devil's chair against the jail. And the jail, the prison system, instead of going to court, settled. And that has happened in prison system after prison system. This is the devil's chair. Now, the devil's chair, according to Dan Cochran, president of AEDEC International, Beaverton, Oregon, they manufacture it, and he calls it the pro-straint violent prisoner chair. He says his chair is humane and was designed to be so. Quote, you know when you take a little bird and it's lost and confused? confused, and at first its heart is beating, he asks. But if you cut that bird in your hands and immobilize it, the bird, he says, calms down. So too, says Cochran, with human beings, the chair makes a nice, a real nice fit for them. This is the devil's chair. But Cochran, as Gonzales, and as people in the United States government say, isolation humane, restraint humane. And Cochran says, if you cut that little bird in your hands and immobilize it, the bird calms down. There is a difference between when you cut a bird in your hand gently and the restraint, the torture that is imposed upon human beings by the prison system, by the U.S. military today. Buried Alive, Torture in America. Three CDs, 3 hours, tightly edited now. Tracks, 4 tracks on each CD for your contribution of $125. This is your moment. It's only being offered today. Your moment to contribute for the continuation of Taking AIM and for WBAI 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
The routine subjection of prisoners to maximum security prisons and to total isolation, the routine breaking down of prisoners, is not random. Although it is designed as a torment for the most vulnerable amongst our exploited population as a part of the war on Black America, it has another and very specific dimension. I described that in an article called Official Murder and Capitalist Rule in America, The Continuing Dynamic. This was an article in 1996, and it had to do with the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. The reason it was specific to the isolation and treatment of prisoners who were broken down by deliberation is it was elucidating the fate of Sirhan Sirhan. The San Francisco Examiner, September 2, 1977, described the CIA's MK-Ultra mind control program. Quote, the program included a study called Operation Artichoke to determine if a prison could be induced involuntarily to commit an assassination. The documentation proceeds to describe a process that had been developed in the American prison system through the deliberate, prolonged isolation of prisoners with sensory deprivation and mental breakdown. W.H. Bowart has devoted 4 chapters in his book Operation Mind Control to case studies of the deliberate experimentation on prisoners by the CIA, Office of Naval Intelligence, and other governmental agency programs undertaken for the specific purpose of, quote, conditioning subjects to become political assassins, unquote. Quote, in July 1975, the Sunday Times in London quoted U.S. naval psychologists who acknowledged that U.S. naval intelligence had taken prisoners and conditioned them as political assassins and placed them in American embassies around the world. Bowart devotes 4 chapters, A School for Assassins, The Face of a Zombie, The So-Called Lone Nuts, and another, Hypnopatsy, with specific and documented instances of prisoners subjected to deep hypnosis and programmed to carry out political assassination. Similarly, John Marks of the Institute of Policy Control, co-author with Victor Marchetti, who was a former high-level officer of the Central Intelligence Agency, of the book The CIA and the Cult of Intelligence, examined this subject specifically in their book The Search for the Manchurian Candidate, The CIA and Mind Control, The Story of the Agency's Secret Efforts to Control Human Behavior. It is described in particular detail in their chapter Brainwashing, an account of Dr. Hewan Cameron's protracted program of taking prisoners and engaging in something called, quote, de-patterning, unquote, defined as, quote, breaking up existing patterns of behavior by means of particularly intensive electroshocks combined with prolonged drug-induced sleep. The chapter says the following. Here is a psychiatrist with the sanction of authority willing, indeed eager, to, quote, wipe the human mind totally clean. Creating such a state in which a man who knew too much would be made to forget had long been a prime objective of Program Artichoke and the MK Ultra programs. Apart from hypnosis, these governmental programs were carried out over decades in prisons on human subjects. Quote, in standard professional electroshock, doctors give the subject a single dose of 110 volts lasting a fraction of a second once a day, every other day. By contrast, Cameron used the form 20 to 40 times more intense, 2 to 3 times daily, with the power turned up to 150 volts. Quote, the frequent screams that echoed through the prison hospital did not deter Cameron or most of his associates in their attempts to depattern their subjects completely. We are describing here the treatment of prisoners and the function of isolation in prison at the hands of the national security state, the mind control operations of MK Ultra and Operation Artichoke. This is not isolated or random occurrence. This is the sustained effort of a criminal state deploying the victim population of the U.S. prisons as raw material for these fiendish designs.
212-209-2950. Buried Alive, Torture in America. Ralph and I broadcast, as you know, regularly, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. And when we hear from you, you're telling us how you come to rely upon our program each week. For the past 2 weeks, we were preempted, and people called the station to say what happened to Taking Aim. People wrote to us. People called us. What happened to Taking Aim? We rely upon you. We look forward to your program each week. Well, you can see that you rely upon us. The station relies upon you to maintain the broadcast facilities to bring Taking Aim to you each week. There is no charge when you turn on your radio. There is no charge when you go to our internet site and access our archive. We bring this to you free. But, as you know, it isn't free to run a station. There are electric bills. There are telephone bills. There's the bill for the rent. There's the bill for the insurance. And there is a core staff that keeps this station running. While most of the producers are unpaid producers, you must maintain a core staff to keep this station vital, vibrant, and to assist each and every one of us who volunteer our time. 212-209-2950. Buried Alive, Torture in America is our gift to you. The responsibility for maintaining WBAI, the donations that you provide in the fund drives that occur each time, several times throughout the year, are what sustain programs such as Taking Aim on the air. 212-209-2950. We're offering Buried Alive, Torture in America because, particularly at this moment, with the impending confirmation of Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General of the United States, with the recent confirmation of Condoleezza Rice as Secretary of State, with the consolidation of the Bush administration, with the total default, and as we have been saying over and again, the anticipated default of the Democratic Party to even have any form of opposition, it is incumbent upon each and every one of us to organize, to form our own political party, expressing our interests and our goals, and most of all, to have the means of communication, to sustain that means of communication. WBAI is first and foremost of significance to that goal. It's important for each and every one of us. We have only a few minutes to go, and we want to play more of the Buried Alive, Torture in America. We must have those phones ringing. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. 209-2950. If you're listening in Oregon, if you're listening in Seattle, if you're listening in Sri Lanka, if you're listening in Norway, this is the time. This is the moment to get on the phone. A long-distance call is a small price to pay for access to WBAI. And if you're locally, it is a local call. You have no excuse. 212-209-2950. Don't take us for granted. Don't take WBAI for granted. Without your contributions, you'll be surprised how soon the station would be off the air. 212-209-2950.
In our programming about the realities of prison and the extraordinary reach of the prison America, its reach to encompass our youth, its reach to target the most vulnerable amongst them, its hidden and yet widely known practice of subjecting people to total isolation and of the torment that accompanies that. When I was citing to you before the study by Martin Cannon, The Controllers, Mind Control, and the Project MK Ultra, Cannon has a passage in which he concludes his description of what is routine now. A specter haunts the nation, the specter of techno-fascism. All of the powers of the espionage empire and the scientific establishment have entered into a holy alliance to invoke this specter. This is the description, as well, by Allard Lowenstein, who is a former congressman and who was a rather conventional politician until he began to look into the murder of Robert Kennedy. In his last public article, Allard Lowenstein, the former congressman, wrote in the Saturday Review on February 2, 1977, James R. Hoffa did not vanish after a rendezvous with James Earl Ray acting alone. Loose nuts do not do in the Yablonskis. New editions of Lee Harvey Oswald or Sirhan Sirhan do not murder Sam Giancana in the basement of his home under 24-hour guard by the FBI. It's time we accept the fact that the question is not whether such groups with such power exist, but how these groups use their power, what they do throughout the country, who their victims are, who their allies are in and out of government, and what can be done to develop and protect democratic process against forces that operate out of sight and beyond the limits of the law and yet have ultimate authority. Not long after writing these words, Howard Lowenstein died at the hands of a lone assassin. The prison reality is an aspect of what he attempted to bring to light and to give political focus in explaining. Please support this programming and support the information that arms us to understand the nature of the state and what the victimization of those who seem so isolated have in store for all of us, what it means for us, what it means for the society, what it compels us to do, why the information is so essential. Support, taking aim, call in your support for this programming. Pledge to support WBAI.
Ralph, let's play another excerpt from the CDs. This is an excerpt from the second CD. Remember, this is a three-hour program, Buried Alive, Torture in America, 212-209-2950.
Maya, quite frankly, these injunctions about torture written by Amnesty, written by the United Nations, written by international conventions, they might as well be put on porous paper for all the application they have, the very paper that isn't allowed the prisoners for any use. Here is the actual reality. CINQ, Utah Maximum Security, basically the board, is a piece of board 3 feet wide and 6 feet long. The prisoner is stripped and shackled, spread-eagled on the board. The board is inclined from the wall. A guard comes in with chow and a bedpan. If you have to use the bathroom, you must do it in the bedpan. You are never unshackled. The guard holds the pan under you. They give you Ensure, which is a protein drink, so you don't eat solid food. Doc S. in the Red Onion State Prison in Wise County, Virginia. And by the way, let us say about the conditions in Virginia with their supermax and their torture instruments and their constant lockdown. All parole has been outlawed in the state of Virginia. Parole is not applicable no matter how minor the crime, how major the crime, how much time you served. Parole is out. The latest in the methods of torture, Doc S. writes, allows nursing staff to order the use of four-point restraints for prisoners. They are constantly accused of masturbating in view of female staff, an unlikely condition that never occurs. These are false claims, and they are deployed to enable them to strap down prisoners who they dislike or any prisoner who they feel they want to punish, 24 hours at a time, in four-point strap-down. Others are put down for 72 hours. There is a new twist to how the 4 points are applied. Normally, a man is strapped at his ankles and his wrists with his arms down at his side. Now, the man's arms are placed above his head. He is strapped to the four corners on a bare board in boxer shorts. He is led up at 8 a.m., 12 noon, and 4 p.m. Then he is restrapped. By 1 a.m., a man has already soiled himself. Prisoners vomit while on their backs. Log copies and medical records relating to the period of restraint are no longer maintained. In apparent anticipation of the influx of prisoners to be strapped down, extra cells have had to be set up and converted into strap-down cells across the prison. I was in the shower when a guy was led up from the restraint so he could take a 2-minute shower because he had soiled himself. The jackbooted thugs made the guy carry his piss-soaked boxers while handcuffed, and then the thug guard said, "We don't give out new boxers because you pissed in them." Then the dude came up and went into the regular cell, and the piss-stinking boxers were placed over his head. Mike C., USP, Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Four-pointed with steel handcuffs, steel leg irons for 70 hours, chained up with those and a belly chain. The warden stared at the outset and then walked off. Alan Q., USP, Lexington, Kentucky. I have been four-pointed multiple times, left in progressive restraints, shackles, belly chain, handcuffs for over 5 days, defecating upon myself, pissing all over myself, left in that condition.
Yashua M. from Northern Prison, Summers, Connecticut, wrote to the American Friends Service Committee that the use of four-point is something that they use to break slaves. They chained me butt naked to a metal bed, cold air blowing on me, no heat in the cell for more than 8 hours. And then a female officer kept coming to the door every 15 minutes to gawk at me. But Dan H. from MCF, Oak Park Heights Prison in Stillwater, Minnesota, reports something very harrowing about what was done to a prisoner in December of 1998. When they placed this prisoner, who was 47 years old, on a four-point restraint board, after a sergeant set him up and stepped on his foot while the prisoner was chained to the steel loop embedded in the bed so he wasn't able to resist. When he pulled away in pain, the officers from the squad began beating him repeatedly and sadistically with knee blows to his thighs and arms. They used pressure point holds to torture the prisoner. He was not resisting. Then they put him on the board face down and placed what appeared to be a golf ball under his left breast. And those 240-pound squad guys put their weight and knees into his back, pressing his breastbones and ribs down upon the board, causing him to scream in terror and agony. 5 months later, I saw this prisoner again, and he still had the bruises under his breastbone. 5 months later. He said that he kept complaining to the administration that the staff were spitting in his food and damaging his property, but no one believed him. And then Dan H., writing about himself, said that eventually he was placed on the board and four-pointed. The guard said he was suicidal. However, this was a lie, as he would never threaten himself, and I never said I would. I was assaulted by the staff, placed on the board with the straps used to hold me down. I could hardly breathe. I have asthma. I lost all feeling in my feet and arms. I began having problems. I couldn't breathe. I panicked. I summoned for help. I thought I would die. And then there was a review of the film. This was actually filmed. And they saw the placement of the board, and the supervisor said, there was nothing wrong.
Charlie S., the federal prisoner in Jackson, Michigan, describes the chair to which he was subjected repeatedly. A hard plastic restraining device in the form of a chair built on a steel frame with two wheels, so when tilted back it can be rolled. The front legs are steel, have two nylon straps on each leg to immobilize the legs. The seat of the chair is higher in the front than the back, causing you to slip back into the seat area. The seat is solid form molding, causing the weight to jam the raised molding into pressure points like the sciatic nerve and the coccyx bone. The back of the chair has raised molding to press on the kidneys and the spine between the shoulder blades. To ensure this pressure, there are two nylon straps that crisscross the chest. The third chest strap is placed directly across the upper rib cage to minimize breathing. A strap is placed directly across the foreheads. Then the guards place a hood over the person's head. The straps are placed in such manner as to cause broken bones and permanent nerve damage. Prisoners, once in the chair, we can remain that way for indefinite periods, hours, even days, 17 hours at a time. The straps cause prisoners to urinate and defecate, in addition to the lumps and the molding pressing on nerves and spinal cord. A 17-year-old boy who suffered a broken arm and died in the chair, killed by guards using the chair on 12-17-98 at Pueblo Jail. I saw them kill him. I was unable to help him. I was interviewed by a journalist from the Pueblo Chieftain at the jail concerning this murder. The reporter told me that the prisoner's murder had been ruled a heart attack. Between the last month of 1998 and the early months of 1999, I was in 15 different county jails, and I saw the chair used consistently in Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Nevada, and California.
The chair is used throughout the United States in county jails for people arrested, whether for drunkenness or for political activity. The chair is used in city prisons.
You've been listening to an excerpt of Buried Alive, Torture in America, 3-CD, 3-hour program, yours for your donation to WBAI, 212-209-2950. We discuss isolation, we discuss the instruments of torture, we discuss the treatment of children, of women, and slave labor. Recently, Bonnie Kerniff of the American Friends Service Committee gave a speech at the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. She noted there are currently over 950,000 women, almost a million women, in the criminal justice custody in the United States, with thousands of those living under other forms of social control, such as parole or probation. Since 1980, the number of women entering prisons in the United States has risen almost 400%, double the rate of men. She spoke to many women in prison, and this is what one of them said in New Jersey. "We are forced to sleep on the floor in the middle of winter with bad backs and aching bodies, cold air still blowing from the vents no matter what the temperature was outside. 2 o'clock in the morning, they wake you up and tell you to clear the room. They go through your personal belongings and then put them in the trash. In Texas, a guard sprayed the woman with pepper spray because she wouldn't take her clothes off in front of 5 male guards. This isn't Abu Ghraib in the U.S. Army or interrogators. This is in Texas, in the United States. Then they carried me to a cell, laid me on a steel bed, and took my clothes off. They left me in that cell with a pepper spray in my face and nothing to wash my face with. I didn't give them any reason to do that. I just didn't want to take my clothes off in front of them." From Arizona. "The only thing you get in isolation is a peanut butter sandwich in the morning, a cheese sandwich in the afternoon, and for supper another peanut butter sandwich. If you want a drink here, you have to drink the toilet water." Report from Bonnie Kerniff, American Friends Service Committee. Buried Alive, Torture in America, 3-CD set. Now is the moment. We have just a few moments till the end of this Taking Aim program. We will not be on next week, and we'll be back with you February 15th, the last day of the WBAI fund drive. This is your only opportunity for Buried Alive, Torture in America, 212-209-2950. Believe me, this is a program that should be distributed to your friends, your family, and your colleagues. Let them know what is going on. It's only when people really fully know what is going on that they take the steps to change it. Ralph.
DeFalla wrote a poem called "We Ain't Got No More Time to Waste." God created the universe, but man made the world, and it ain't nothing. We ain't got no more time to waste. The dope man is hiding in your mother's closet, and the pigs are at the front door, and the man is coming down hard on us, and we ain't got no more time to waste. Prisoners don't get no rights, and freedom is still unfree, and what am I gonna do when they come for you, and what are you gonna do when they come for me? And what are we gonna do when they come for us? We ain't got no more time to waste. The poem is long, brothers and sisters, but the struggle is too. Support this programming. Support Taking Aim. Support Free Speech Radio.
212-209-2950. Please, we've been amazed by the unresponsiveness, I have to say, of people towards Buried Alive Torture in America. When this program was broadcast, and now it's been edited, it is a tight, tight, tight program. This is one of the programs people kept calling us, they kept writing to us, they kept telling us how important Buried Alive Torture in America was and what it meant to them. Please, we know this is the second week of the WBAF Fund Drive. Still, those of you who have not made your contribution, now is the moment. 212-209-2950. Demonstrate your support for Taking Aim. We know you're listening. We know you rely upon WBAI, and you rely upon Ralph and me to come to you each and every week. We couldn't do it without your support for WBAI. 212-209-2950. We want to thank Tony Ryan, who's engineering for us, and Dred Scott Keyes, who was engineering earlier, and unfortunately Michael G. Haskins at home, ill. We send you our very best. And to all of the people at WBAI who help bring the program to you each week. Kathy Davis, the Public Affairs Director, and Spider, who engineers, and people at KPFA who also help bring Taking Aim to you. It's a two-station enterprise. We go through a lot of effort. It is your effort, too, that sustains Taking Aim. And you know it. We know you know it. 212-209-2950. We selected Buried Alive Torture in America because of its significance at this moment in history. 212-209-2950. We know we can change society. But before we do so, people have to really know the full significance of what is taking place in their name across the country. 212-209-2950. Systematic torture. Systematic degradation. Degradation. Over 6 million people have been prisoners in state and federal penitentiaries now in the United States. Over 2 million currently incarcerated. Remember, the probability 1 in 3 African-American males will at some point in their life pass through the penal system. Are we going to allow this to remain as this? No, we are not. And that means 212-209-2950. WBAI is a significant part of social change in this country. It is our means of communication. Our means to reach people, not just in Manhattan, Staten Island, Bronx, Brooklyn, and Queens, over 90-mile radius, and then through the Internet throughout the world. People throughout the world rely on WBAI. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Chicago Tribune, January 9th, The Torture Flights, an article by John Crudson. He documents the Gulfstream jets that are carrying kidnapped civilians, U.S. civilians, and flying them to undisclosed detention centers. An article in the mainstream press in the Chicago Tribune. And yet, the delineation of this reality on a daily basis depends upon a different medium than the Chicago Tribune, with its valued but random report that shows the tip of the iceberg. It is no longer fantasy. It is not fear. It is official state policy and practice in the United States. In a certain sense, we have to say, it's the face of fascism in America. And there are few avenues of fighting back on the basis of information, analysis, and political understanding. Taking Aim, WBAI, Free Speech Radio, your support, your involvement, it is not a spectator sport, brothers and sisters. We're all involved in this together.
212-209-2950. Our gift to you, Buried Alive, Torture in America. You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We will be back with you on February 15th. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net, that's PACBELL.net, or at takingaim@WBAI.org. Our internet site is www.takingaim.info, that's .info. You can reach us by phone at 707-552-9995. We want to thank all of you who have contributed. And remember to tune in again on February 15th for the last day of the WBAI Fund Drive. Thanks again, Tony. And please keep those phones ringing, 212-209-2950. This is your only opportunity for the fully edited Buried Alive, Torture in America.